It's time for Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'm really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll be speaking about dolphins and more with Rick O'Berry, who's at the center of the extraordinary new documentary, The Cove. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is a piece called Dolphin Dance by the Ahmad Jamal Trio here on Talking Animals. This is the Ahmad Jamal Trio with a piece called Dolphin Dance, an animal tune of sorts as we ease into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name is Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be hearing from today's guest, Rick O'Berry, the former dolphin trainer, most famously on the TV show Flipper, who renounced that world nearly 40 years ago and has since been dolphins' foremost protector, rescuer, and advocate. O'Berry is also the nominal star of the revolutionary new documentary, The Cove. We'll cover all those things and more when we hear from Rick O'Berry in a few moments here on Talking Animals. First, though, time for some animal news items and or announcements. Got a couple of fundraising events coming up on the horizon here. First of all, Florida Voices for Animals is holding their annual dog and car wash Saturday, September 12th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. That'll be at Rolling Oats Market in Tampa, formerly Nature's Harvest Market. That's at 1021 North MacDill Avenue in Tampa. So getting your canine and or your car washed helps support Florida Voices for Animals. Also, mark your calendars a little further down the road. This is a fundraiser for the Little Cats Rescue, Inc. On October 3rd, they're doing a safari night in the Grove. So it's a safari-themed dinner, dance, and entertainment at the Groves Golf and Country Club, Land O'Lakes, Florida. There'll be drum magic, DJ for dance music, door prizes, silent auction, all kinds of eats, of course, and more. So to find out more or to get tickets, call 813-412-3714. 813-412-3714 for Safari Night. Again, raising some dough for the Little Cats Rescue. So let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy, as always, of course. This is Brian Regan with a highly relevant piece called Flipper on today's Comedy Corner here on Talking Animals.
I watched a lot of Flipper growing up. Flipper, he was something. Always saving people. Every show he'd go save some more. I save some people! For that, they would throw him a dead fish. Hey, thanks! Thanks for saving people. He was always doing that backwards dance, three quarters out of the water. Man, that was cool. Imagine if you could do that. That'd impress some people at the public pool, you know? Just go, hey, how y'all doing? You know? Just skip across the top of the pool without getting your bathing suit wet and hop up on the other side. Hey, what's happening? And just grab a little towel, wipe off your feet. Yeah, it's a little colder than I thought. Wow, who's that guy?
All right, that was Brian Regan with a piece called Flipper from his album simply entitled Live. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs, including our last show with author Charles Siebert. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page. We invite you to become our fan. And also a link right there to our blog and more. It's also, of course, a place to subscribe to our email newsletter so we can keep you posted on forthcoming guests, program news, and more. That's all at talkinganimals.net. Also, a little sneak preview towards the end of the show for Name That Animal Tune. We'll be giving you some lucky winner an HD radio. Part of this new sort of pairing of WMNF and USF's Bulls Radio College Rock Station. But more about that when we get into Name That Animal Tune. But Keep your ears tuned and your dialing fingers ready for that. So that'll be very cool. It's nearly time now to hear from today's guest, Rick O'Berry. So let me outline a few things about him. As I noted earlier in the show, he's the former dolphin trainer. Again, most notably on the TV show Flipper, who renounced that world nearly 40 years ago and has since been dolphins' main protector, rescuer, and advocate in all kinds of ways all over the globe. And not coincidentally, O'Berry is a poignant presence at the center of this revolutionary new documentary called The Cove, which, among many other things, is an expose of the dolphin slaughter that takes place annually in the Japanese town of Taichi. So, quick word about this interview. For reasons I won't get into at this moment, I had to track down Rick O'Berry myself. And when I did, it was last Friday, and he was almost out the door, basically, to return to Japan. So we did this interview on the fly, and we were both on phones at home. And apparently Rick was on a cordless phone, which resulted in some occasional feedback and static. So I hope you'll forgive that. It's just a little bit periodically, but overall the interview, I think, is well worth hearing. So let's listen now to Friday's recorded conversation with Rick O'Berry on Talking Animals.
All right, well, let's welcome to Talking Animals Rick O'Berry. Thanks so much for joining us today, Rick. I appreciate it.
Well, nice to be with you.
Well, and after I saw The Cove, I was just profoundly affected. I wrote an email to a friend saying the film was revolutionary in all senses of the word. Perhaps we can come back to that notion in a moment. But for first, for those who haven't had an opportunity to see The Cove yet, maybe you could just give us your description of the film.
Well, I'm not one of the filmmakers. I must tell you, I had a call from them about 5 years ago. Luis Sahoyas, the director, asking if he could follow me around with my camera. With his camera, I should say.
Yeah.
I'd been in Taiji, Japan, going there for about 8 years, five times a day, a year, from September through March, and finding it very, very difficult to get media attention for this, what is indeed the largest dolphin slaughter in the world.
Yeah.
And so he showed up, and it was a television show at that point. But after he started collecting the footage, they realized they had a feature film. And it's really a lot. It's about, you know, trying to answer your question and capitalize it, but it's about a lot of things.
Yeah.
It's not about what, it's a complicated film.
Right. Well, actually, in terms of that, I mean, it is about a lot of things. And perhaps foremost among those things, at least from my vantage point, is that it's about bravery. I mean, you know, your bravery, the team who signed on to make the film, the city councilmen that's featured there. I mean, how do you react to that assessment? Is that sort of one of the key elements for you?
Well, I think the real hero in the story, the whole story hasn't been told, the Cove movie is really a cliffhanger. You don't know what happened at the end.
Yeah.
My son, Lincoln O'Barry, is a producer, and he's doing a series piece for the Discovery Channel. We're actually going back tomorrow to Taiji. One of the real hero is Mr. Yamashita, who is one of the city councilmen who has since left the town that he grew up in, was born in and grew up in, is now ostracized from the town. He should be the mayor, but today he's driving a taxi cab outside Tokyo because he stood up and spoke out, and that's something you don't do in Japan. It goes against kata. Japanese kata is Japanese way of doing things, and you don't blow the whistle on the government or mercury poisoning. That's something he did, and so
he paid a price for it.
Yeah, he's real. I mean, at this point, he's not a hero in Japan because nobody knows about this movie in Japan or knows about Mr. Yamashita.
Yeah,
that's part of our work, is to make sure that he's held up as a hero, and we're going to be giving him a huge award so that it makes the mayor and the other city commissioners who continue to sell this poison dolphin meat to unsuspecting customers, makes them look pretty bad.
Yeah. So it sort of forces their hand a little bit, I guess.
Yeah. But in the film, there are two city councilmen who spoke out, but one of them has changed his mind and is now defending the practice of killing dolphins. So that's Mr. Riono.
Really? Wow. So obviously buckling to pressure.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Look, I completely understand that. I mean, they're under tremendous pressure. It's a small town. This has been going on for, you know, hundreds of years, and And when we leave, they have to deal with the local people.
Yeah.
And, he buckled under pressure. So, yeah, it's an ongoing story.
Yeah. Wow. Well, let me let our listeners know, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with the former dolphin trainer and now a longtime dolphin advocate, Rick O'Berry, who's at the center of the new film, The Cove. This is a conversation that was recorded last week. So Rick, it strikes me that sort of another really significant storyline of the film is redemption. I mean, particularly your redemption, which, as a former dolphin trainer who decades ago transformed into dolphins, really chief protector, rescuer, advocate. I mean, how does that square with your own feelings about the path you've traveled the last, 40 years or so?
Well, yeah, the movie, and I was surprised, to be frank, I didn't know that until I saw it at Sundance.
Really?
It was about me. I had no idea. I thought it was about Mandy. Free diver, she's much more interesting than I am.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I know what you're saying, but I don't know that I agree.
I mean, here's a woman who can, on one breath of air, free dive 300 feet. And, I thought the story would be about her and what she's doing. And so I was very surprised, yeah.
Well, and so let's talk a little bit again about just sort of what triggered that transformation. I mean, so there you are working on Flipper and training and working with the five dolphins, I guess it is, who portrayed Flipper, and then, sort of this awful thing happened that I guess sort of triggered a dark epiphany. Maybe you could just talk a moment about that.
Well, I was with that industry for about 10 years, went to work at the Miami Aquarium when I got out of the Navy as a diver.
Yeah.
My first day on the job on the capture boat was the first day. Actually, I don't know where they got the footage, but it's in the movie. You see me catching dolphins in Biscayne Bay.
Yeah.
And we caught about 100 of them in that first year for new dolphinariums opening up around the world, including the U.S. Navy Dolphins of War program. 13 of them went to Cameron Bay in Vietnam. And so we were capturing dolphins and selling them all over the place, and I was promoted to the main tank, doing the underwater show with a helmet on and a canvas suit, walking around passing out fish in the bottom of the tank. And you, from there, go up the ladder to become a dolphin trainer, and then the TV series Flipper, well, actually the pilot, Flipper's New Adventure, came along, and the producers made a deal with Seaquarium where the Seaquarium, where it would be shot at the Seaquarium. The top side would be shot there.
Okay.
And the Seaquarium would supply the dolphin and a dolphin trainer.
Mm-hmm.
So I was chosen primarily because my roots is that of a diver, and we were going to be doing this training underwater for the first time. So I did that for about 7 years with the Flipper show.
Yeah.
And then since 1970, Earth Day, so almost 40 years now, I've been pretty much working to tear down that whole industry that Flipper built up.
Right. Well, that's obviously, sort of a pivotal part of your story and really a part of at least a sub-story within the Cove. So maybe, that really, because it seems like what happened with Kathy that day, near as I can tell, at least kind of sent you on that path. I don't know if you want to briefly sort of recount, how that actually happened and how it affected you.
Yeah, well, Kathy was Flipper for the TV series. We had five female dolphins who collectively played the part of Flipper for the TV series, but mainly it was Kathy. And after the show ended, life became very, very boring for her. She was probably the most active dolphin for the 4 years we filmed. And then it all stopped. And the show ended, and she was warehoused in a steel tank, very small steel tank. Today, it would be illegal at that tank, at the size of a small living room.
Wow, yeah.
She committed suicide. Just stopped breathing. Dolphins are automatic air breathers. And that's why they don't sleep. Every breath is a conscious effort. So I know it's a strong word, suicide, but
yeah.
I think that is the correct word.
And so, Rick, I'm of course very interested in that. I mean, because I do know that the dolphins do breathe by sort of consciously taking those breaths, and in that awful moment that you're describing, you're saying Kathy chose not to take a breath. But, I mean, exactly how or why was it clear to you you know, why she had decided to end her life. Was it just, you know, I mean, it was just clearly the confines of the tank and all the excitement and stimulation of the series sort of having been removed.
Yeah, in isolation. I mean, isolation is a bad thing for a very social animal.
Sure.
Dolphins are free-ranging, highly social creatures.
Yeah.
With a brain larger than a human brain. Well, it's kind of like putting, if you put a human in the same habitat.
Solitary confinement, for example.
Yeah. The life becomes pretty friggin' miserable. Even if it's the best five-star hotel room, if you're stuck in there, and that's it, and we'll put your food under the door, but you're not going anywhere, yeah, that can become quite depressing. So they do get depressed, and they don't belong in captivity. I realize that. And look, if I wanted to, I could walk out of here and start my own dolphin swim program in the Bahamas somewhere and put out some politically correct spin about, you know, dolphin-assisted therapy and research and education. And I could be making $3 or $4 million a year. There's nothing stopping me from doing that.
Yeah.
Except I couldn't sleep at night.
Well, that's another thing. I mean, really, in the film, you seem like a man who even now is still sort of tormented by the life and death of darn near all dolphins. Like somehow you're responsible for everything bad that's happened or does happen to a dolphin, whether it's captivity or the annual slaughter in Taiji. I mean, after all the sort of, you know, wonderful and to me at least heroic things you've done for dolphins over all these years, you must feel somewhat better, like you've atoned, no?
Yeah, I do. I don't really. I'm not really. When I first started doing this work, rescuing dolphins and rehabilitating and releasing them back into the wild, which is exactly the opposite of what I was doing at the Seaquarium. I was capturing them and training them, and now I rescue them, rehabilitate them, and put them back. It's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
And I've done that in Guatemala, Nicaragua, Colombia, Haiti, Brazil, the United States. That's a wonderful feeling to see them. They literally get their life back.
Sure.
It's a difficult thing because it's always in a remote third world country's place that's usually very dangerous and dirty and corrupt. Colombia and places like that, it's been joyous, and you see some of those scenes in the Cove, the movie.
Yeah. Well, again, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we are speaking with the former dolphin trainer, now long-time dolphin advocate, protector, rescuer, etc., Rick O'Berry, who's at the center of the new film, The Cove. This is a conversation that was recorded last week. So it sounds like, at this point that you have sort of, you know, granted yourself not only forgiveness, but that it, you know, feels pretty good to sort of be the guy that's, you know, helping dolphins and setting them free whenever possible. And so sort of back to this theme of redemption, I guess I was interested just because The Cove was sort of released overlapping the period when Michael Vick completed his prison term and was signed by the Philadelphia Eagles and triggered this whole controversy, obviously, in a wide array of, sort of mostly charged responses, both inside and outside the animal welfare world. I mean, given everything we've been discussing here, I'd be really interested in your perspective on the Vick situation. I mean, your read on his statements of apology and change and how effective he could be on the issue of dogfighting.
Give the guy, I mean, everybody makes mistakes.
Yeah.
There isn't nobody out there who, and so, Michael has a lot of power. Will he use it? I think so. I think, you know, when he looks, when I look back, 50 years now, capturing dolphins and training dolphins all makes sense. This movie would not be happening and the work I'm doing right now would not be happening, had I not had that flipper experience. The same, may be true for Michael Vick.
Right.
Only time will tell.
Yeah.
But he could be the dog's best advocate.
Yeah.
He could be the most powerful person if he actually takes action.
Yeah.
Time will tell.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I know also, too, we're just sort of in our final few moments here, Rick, but I know that you're off to Japan tomorrow. What do you expect to encounter there in the wake of The Cove's release? I mean, will anything be different? Obviously, I know The Cove is not playing there, probably won't be playing there at any time ever, probably. But
oh,
I mean,
it will. That's the most important place for it to play.
Of course, but I thought for some reason that was for that exact reason people were sort of keeping it out of there.
Well, the government will. They'll ban it.
Yeah.
But they cannot stop the Internet. The Internet is a revolutionary tool, and the executive producer, Jim Clark, is the guy who started Netscape.
Yeah.
He knows how to get this in front of the Japanese people on the Internet for free.
Yeah.
And we're in the process of making a Japanese version as we speak, so they will see it.
Okay, great, great, great. And along those lines, is Japan the only country where this sort of dolphin slaughter takes place, or just the most egregious?
It's the largest slaughter of dolphins in the world.
Okay.
They do something similar in the Solomon Islands, and I work for Earth Island Institute, have an employee there, and we're working on that problem. Also, the Faroes Islands, which is Danish. My wife is Danish, and we're working on that issue also. If people want to get involved and help us, they can go to SaveJapanDolphins.org and take action.
Right. Well, along those lines, yeah, I think people, there's other things really just to expose the secret of the dolphin slaughter. I mean, yeah, go to that website, of course, See the Cove. I guess you'd be the first to say stay away from you know, dolphin shows and any kind of swim with dolphins.
Yep, answer, don't buy a ticket. It sounds very simplistic, but the dolphin captivity issue, the solution is don't buy a ticket.
Yeah.
It's based on supply and demand, like any other product, and if we don't buy a ticket, these places will go away.
Sure. And sort of in just our final moment or two here, Rick, as the secret of what goes on in Tai Chi gets exposed through all these different means, the Internet and the film itself and its ripple effect, what do you anticipate happening there, given all the political and financial elements that the film makes clear seem to be well served by the slaughter continuing? I mean, is it just going to be slowly eroded? Will there be a parallel, say, to the Canadian seal hunt and what's finally starting to happen there?
I think the Cove movie, once it gets before the Japanese people, will shut it down.
Yeah.
Because the dolphin meat is a product also, and
yeah,
based on supply and demand, like any other product.
Sure.
If the Japanese people had any idea that it was contaminated with mercury, they wouldn't buy it. There's no question in my mind about that. They're more concerned about healthy food than we are. So the same is true with whaling. This film could bring down whaling because a lot of the whale meat that we tested is counterfeit. It's actually poisoned dolphin meat or horse meat. And if the Japanese consumers had any idea that happening, they wouldn't buy it.
Yeah.
So it's really about supply and demand. This issue will not be one on food culture issues, and it won't be one on cruelty issues, because it's a very different
cultural view there. Yeah.
Culture and it will be one on mercury poisoning.
Yeah.
And consumer issues. So I feel very confident, actually.
That's great. Well, what a great note on which to end our conversation today. Thank you very much, Rick, for joining us again. It's Rick O'Berry. Of course, you can see him in the film The Cove. You can also visit SaveJapanDolphins.org. And thanks for joining us, and thanks for all your great work over the years, Rick.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right, I'm Duncan Strauss. You are listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize, a new HD radio, no less, tied to our cool teaming of WMNF and USF's Bulls Radio. That's a student-run college rock station, and now they're going to be able to be heard on our digital side channels. So you can hear them with that digital radio all over our listening area. We're giving away one of those radios per show this entire week. So we will give one right here on Talking Animals. So the first person who calls in at 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune, it's named that animal tune on Talking Animals. The fine print is you're welcome to pick up the radio at the station, which will cost you nothing. Or if we send it to you, there is $15 in postage. So it's up to you. And we'll get you involved with our cool Bulls Radio collaboration with USF. All right, we have just about reached the end of Talking Animals. The station airs. Hold on one sec. Not surprising. We got a big influx of calls here. Let's see what we got. Hi, you're on the air on WMNF.
Yeah, the Birdhouse.
Birdhouse, is that what you said?
Yeah.
So close.
Great song.
Do you want to take one last shot at correcting it? You're so close.
Oh, my God.
Okay, we got to go. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Hi, you're on WMNF. Do you know?
Yeah, isn't it the weather report, Birdland?
That's the one we were looking for. What is your first name, sir?
Brian,
all right, stay put. I'll come back and get your info. You are the winner of our fabulous new HD radio, so I'll come back and get your info. One sec. Thanks for playing. Okay, folks, we do have a winner, and but there'll be other HD radios given away pretty much every show this week, so check that out. Meanwhile, we have reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. The program airs twice a month, specifically the first and second Wednesday of each month, so we'll return next Wednesday, September 9th, when our guest will be Wayne Pacelli, the president and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, the nation's largest animal organization. Pacelli's very much been in the news lately for his decision to have HUS team with Michael Vick on dogfighting education upon his release from prison. Really interesting guy, leading really the biggest organization pretty much in the world, I think, along those lines. So I hope you'll join me then. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby McKenna. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Trust. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And we're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune. This one, again, highly relevant for our Rick O'Berry conversation. This is Poe with Dolphin on WMNF Tampa.
There's a broken beam inside of the big, big bridge. I guess that old thing is caving in. Maybe it is time I learn how to swim. I'll be a dolphin. said this time I have to swim.
It is 88.5 FM WMNF, seconds away for the NPR News. We'll catch you next Wednesday on Talking Animals with Wayne Pacelli from HSUS.